session number 1204, rule 2.
Mr. Stanley Ferguson, Reel 2. Mm-hmm. What other memories have you of the journey into Iraq, Mr. Ferguson?
Well, we stopped one night outside of the RAF airfield. I forget the name. It was called the Second London. It was named all the London streets, you know. And we camped on one side of the road. Every man in the tent stayed awake. And our life was changed, our lists. We had a whole company on patrol down there because of the Arabs. Yet across the road at the RAF station, all they had was a man on guard with a stick. Now, that was a DLI discipline for you. I think they're just deliberately trying to make us sick.
Were the Arabs after something that...
Well, they thought they could have pinched the guns and things like that, you know. Whether or not the DLI don't know why, I never saw any. I just thought keeping people awake like that, chained together, a lot of convicts in a tent, you know. The lamp burning all night. It was serious.
Were any weapons stolen?
No. Oh, nothing happened at all. Just one of them things. They said, you do it. But I couldn't understand. All that valuable equipment on the RAF and all they had was a man and guard with a stick. Not a gun in sight.
But so your carriers were being transported on the backs of
the
trucks?
On the backs of the trucks.
You were on a motorbike?
Actually, I was on the motor. I was a donor. But, you know, I had to follow them, otherwise I'd have been lost.
And were you given any particular job to do on the journey?
No, just to keep them all together. Supposedly, the set-off champion. To lay the test and then they're away. Spreading light out, you know. Once they knew where they were going, that was it. They went in their own time. You want to try to keep them on the motorbike on sand? It's difficult, I can tell you.
And what were the problems getting them together at night before you
started? Well, no problem. They all got in the same place. They knew where they were going. That's it. They got there. They didn't want you to tell them to keep in line or this happened to that. You know, they wanted to go the wrong way, and they did. Well, they were clever. How they found the way, I don't know. The funny thing was, you know, there's no maps or nothing. With me, if I'd got lost, I'd have been lost. Simple as that.
Any other memories of that journey?
No, not there. I think they were bad enough. Just a short ride like that. You know what I mean? How far would it be? Say, 900 miles would it be? So that was what sickened us. The guards at night at 3:30 in the afternoon, scrubbing the equipment, polishing your brushes, and mounting the band and bugles in the desert. I mean, I don't suppose anybody else in the British Army had the band and bugles out in a place like that. But it was pointless. And there's nobody to see us. It wouldn't have been so bad. It'd been spectators clapping and cheering, you know. But see me. No, it was serious, that.
And where did you go to?
As I said, we went to Moselle. But don't ask us what we did. I don't think we did anything. It was only on expectation that the Germans were going to be through the Caucasus that we went in the first place. But, we hadn't even been climatised. Two extremes, hot to cold, and then back again. We must have been tough in MDS, really.
The journey back was some 2 or 3 months afterwards. Yeah. Do you recall that journey? Was it much the same?
No, different altogether. But I don't remember coming back. It's funny, isn't it? So must have gone back, but I can't remember how.
You would get back to Egypt.
That's it. And then you stayed up to the Gazala box.
And do you recall the way up to the box?
No. That's it. I was just travelling one behind the other. And if there's a bit of a sandstorm, the fellow in the front would stop and you wouldn't know it. He's banging the back of him. And that's how we went up. Bang, bang, all the way up. Oh, that was bad, that. We didn't go that fast, you know.
Were the carriers again on trucks?
No, this time they went on their own trucks. And that's quite a wee.
Did this not have its effect on wear and tear, such a long journey?
Oh, they do. I mean, for one thing, the bogey wheels, the rubbers usually get soft, you know. Maybe it's changed the tyre, as we call it, the tyre on the bogey wheel. Or you might lose a pin on the outside. Well, it's supposed to be a 5-man job to change a truck. But I got into the knack where I could do it myself, on my own, by making the carrier do the job for me.
How was that done?
Well, if it's, say it was a left-hand truck, you'd lock the wheel so that the other one wouldn't go down, and it used to pull the truck down over the waist for you, the engine. and then you put a couple extra links in to join them, then you just yank it up tight, and you're okay. You know, that's emergency. You could do it. I've done it myself on the way back from Gazala. Change the bogey wheel even. I had to. I was on my own for 5 days.
So when you got to the box, what was life like in the box?
Monotonous. I mean, you've got to remember, we had nothing, no telly, no boots or nothing today, just a trench to dig in. And you could see your mates, and that was it. And you could see them into the far distance. If you look far enough, you might see the Germans. But other than that, we're very monotonous. I mean, myself, I used to go out on patrol. I was given a certain area to cover, but not beyond. They never said go and contact the Germans or anything like that. Just keep your eye open. You know, that's all we did.
So the carriers were used for that kind of
patrol work. That's all.
And where were you? Were you stationed or positioned, should I say, in some particular area within the battalion?
No. Just where headquarters company was. You had the carriers and the anti-tank and mortars.
And you were dug into trenches?
Yes, I. One man a trench, not communal. It wasn't safe.
Slip trenches?
Ah, a slip trench, about 6 foot, about 4 foot deep.
And how did you get on for latrines? And?
Oh, you used to dig your own. You know, I had a shovel with you, and I'm not putting it to you, but I had a funny sight to one, an officer. He just finished, I didn't know it was an officer, and I was a big backside, you know. I said, get you take it. And it turned out to be a major. And he looked dead in the face when he was sitting there.
Can't recall his neighbour about
it. Oh, no, not really, no. And I was in them with that, like, do you mate?
What was food like in the box?
Oh, the usual rubbish. Everything was prunes. Prunes of this and prunes of that. I don't know if it was trying to keep his open messing or what, but, oh, you got sick of the sight of prunes. And as I say, it was McConaughey's, stuff like that. I mean, the tea. No, that was something. We got 2 pints of water a day, the denim. And in those days, 1 pint was for drinking, washing, and shaving. We had to shave every day, the denim, out that 1 pint. Now, I was a mouth breather. And I used to get terribly dry. And when I used to go on patrol, I used to nip half a cup of water with the radiator and drink that. No sugar on it. Antifreeze the lot, but with lovely nectar. Even your own urine, people drink that. And I've washed in it, and I've tasted it, but I wouldn't recommend it. But the thirst was so bad, and the heat. And 1 pint of water, I mean, it's nothing in 24 hours, you know. And what he used to know me, there's a Newcastle major, I think he was a major at the time, he used to get 2 gallons of water to bath in every day.
Can't you remember who this was?
No, well, I think it was Scott, but I wouldn't make him sure. Didn't do to mention the years and things like that. But it sickened the boys to think, you know. But like everything else, you get used. At times at night sometimes you should pour. Team. And you get a good drink then. But
is it common for the officers to get more water than...
Well, I should think so. Fiddly is. Oh, yes. I mean, they had the cambeds every time as well. I mean, that was something else we hadn't. You know, houses were slick then. They had the cambeds. We made our own. I used to just dig a little trench and put another shelf on and lie on the shelf. We used to have a tin of sand with a piece of string in the middle, fill it with petrol, and add a little lamp. Nothing to do with it. It just kept the place light, you know.
Did you get mail?
Now and again, yes. Sometimes I got a parcel from the Sunderland Corporation, and it had a picture of a tram car, socks, Oxo, of course we had no water, and laser blade, and I thought it was very good of them, you know. In fact, only reason I gave the last tram car I had away to the Museum over the Water, Monkmeerworth. I don't know if they still got or not. But the mayor was few and far between. Something actually you've forgotten the end. I mean, when you did send a letter, you couldn't say much because it was censored, you know. And the paper wasn't all that big. I think there was one in the case there. I'm not sure now. But, I mean, nothing you could say because you couldn't say where you were. You couldn't say what you were doing. More or less, a nice day kind of stuff. Which is useless, isn't it? There's not across the end, you. I mean, you wrote the letter, so you must be alive.
Did you? How did you combat the monotony?
Well, as I say, it's one of these damn things you just get used to. I can't really say how I passed the day. But it must have been monotonous, just standing in the space all the time. The only odd excitement is a playing game over. And dive bombed you. You know, that gave you something to do. And, or you shot back at it, you know. I remember one beachhead where I had a communal trench. And this lad in my platoon, I forget his name now, he's a proper laddie darlad, not rough and ready, you know, well brought up. And this plane came up, started machine gunning. And he turned on his door straight in that communal trench. You know, I'll just lay on the top, I wouldn't this, that. I just thought, oh.
This is the communal lavatory.
The communal lavatory. He just door straight in. Took great as you know.
Whilst you were there, then were you involved in maintaining your carriers? Was that a regular thing?
Not really, no. All you did, more or less, in those days was just keep a chocolate up petrol. You know, you hadn't time to work a book down on vehicles. You could have been taken unawares, you know. I mean, you wouldn't have time to slip a vehicle down. You might have been called out any time, you know. Like the word Gazala. As I say, when we took these prisoners, did I tell you we took the prisoners?
We'll come to that.
Oh,
I thought I had. Yeah, we'll come to it again in a few minutes. Were the vehicles under some form of camouflage or protection?
Oh, had nets, camouflage nets. But normally what they liked to do there, they used to annoy me this a lot, dig a hole 12 foot 6 inches deep, about 5 inches deep at one end, with a slope. So that wasn't visible above the ground. You spend all night digging that hole, next morning you move out, never even use it, you know. It was hard work, especially in the sun. But that often happened, that. But other times, well, but use a camouflage net, and mostly in Europe, where we'd be saying.
What was the desert like? Can you describe it in the Gazala box?
Well, it varied so much. It wasn't soft in so much that you stepped forward and went one back. It was pretty hard. Other times it was like stones. Stony, like Libya, really hard, you know, hard going. But around the Quantara Depression, of course, it was soft sand. In fact, I lost my sight there for 24 hours. I went blind. It was so white. I was near the coast. And I looked up. I said, that's funny. I can't see anything. It's milk. You know, God, I said, what's happened here? And the next one, I was all right.
Was there any chance to get away on leave whilst you were in the war?
Oh, yes.
Before the fighting started?
There was a four-day leave at Alex or Cairo. I think I had one four leave at Alex and I had one at Cairo. City Beach in Alex, but it soon passed. But it was worth going. I mean, you went into a tent. I always remember the tent at the gate of the field, and outside the field, the Dobie Wallers, the lonely men, you know, and get on the tram into Alex and go straight there. First, you have a nice cool drink. That's all I was concerned with, something to drink. But I went to the open air picture hall in Cairo. You know, no top on it. You could hardly see the thing. When the sun came over, you couldn't see the pictures at all. That was the only time I went to a cinema. In fact, I've got the name somewhere in my case of the cinema. But that was all.
Did you feel on leave that there was a lot of military people around who were not fighting?
Oh, yes, there was. But what annoyed me, or most of the lads, actually, in the likes of Cairo, you go into Cairo with your hobnail boots and your putties and your turned-up shorts, like thumbs, and you get the American Negroes with superfine slacks, shoes, different army altogether. And when you realise they were getting double the money you were getting, you felt like proper outcast.
There was some of them already there, was there?
Oh, well, they were possibly on leave as well, I imagine, you know. But where they were from, I don't know, but those definitely coloured Americans. Or possibly might have been South Africans, I don't know. But you used to know that all the dress they were in, unhorsing in our battle dress kind of style.
Whilst you were in the box, did you have any opportunity or at all for going somewhere for proper baths?
Oh, no. Nothing like that. We'll just have a pint of water without a shave. Oh, no. We weren't near the sea. 90 and I never saw the sea all the time. Yet other lads were bathing in the sea water, you know, but we never. Just the way things were, you know. We were inland all the time. Because next to us, I think it was the 1st South African Division between us and the sea. That's why. So,
did you get any opportunities to actually mix with them at all,
no.
South Africans?
Oh, no. You always stuck in the same area. Oh, yes. Very limited to where you could go, you know. As I say, obviously, I mean, you might just wander up and find you have to go forward quickly or get back quickly, you know. So you just stuck in one area all the time.
Can you tell me at all, Mr. Ferguson, anything about the defences of the box?
Not really, no. We just have so many men on each platoon, with a machine gun, you know, keeping a lookout. That's all.
They'd have a minefield in front.
Oh, yeah, the minefield. Oh, yes.
And how were you able to get in and out?
Well, they had the spears. They could pass through it.
And these were marked?
Oh, yes. Like wires. There were ropes, you know. Proper path marked through the minefield.
Now, you said you had to go out on patrols.
Out through the minefield.
How were they organised and how did you do it?
Well, just left. There were so many miles down your front, your area, and just come back. Just keep my eyes open for anything is out of the ordinary, you know.
Did you have any idea how far the Germans or the Italians were away from you?
No. You could see them, some parts. In fact, it was quite common to see them line up for the breakfast and our lads send a shell or two over, you know. And I suppose they did the same with us. But generally, for every day, they just ignored each other, you know. It's only when you had to advance, you had to shoot, you know.
When you went up on this raid, do you recall it and can you describe it?
Well, as I said, the funny part I remember most of all was the lads were behind the tanks, three tanks, and my carrier down at about 4 miles an hour, and they couldn't wait, and they landed in front of us, which of course put our guns out of action because we'd have shot them. And they got there first, and I think the Germans was just saw us coming, like, and took flight to surrender. And on the way back, the Germans, as I said, knew where the output was. The outpost was, and they started to shell the area, and it was pretty thick. And I lost one carrier. It fell like beside him in the shell. I can still see the bogey wheel going in the air, as a matter of fact, if I just think about it.
What happened to the occupants?
Oh, they're dead. All right. And then when we got back, we were told, destroy everything you can carry. The Leif party had been captured on the way back to Cairo by the Germans behind our lines. And that's when the carry-on started to chase down the desert, you know. But being in a blind carrier, I could carry everything we had, which is why I've still got all those souvenirs, you know.
What are your memories of that routine?
Well, the thing you can remember is going down by the coast on these big rocks, and these little spotter planes used to come over about 10 foot off the ground, machine gun and that, you know, and you had to duck behind the rocks. So you couldn't fire that team because it was so low. Your angle of your rifle would be so awkward, you might shot the fella next to you. And went into Tobruk, and I remember came to a minefield, and we had to send some of our three tunners down and push them down in front of us to explode the mine so we could get through. And when we got through, I said, oh, we should be safe. No, all these fellas here. But we carried on towards Mers and went through, and that was when Tobruk fell. And are we going on Tobruk, are we? Are we time? Well, when we left Tobruk, we came along this wadi, like what we call a wadi, like a deer between two hills. And we're going so fast that the sand was kicked up. You couldn't see in front of you more than 10 feet. And on the other side of this wadi, there's another sandstorm. You say, oh, I thought nothing of it. And when we got to the end, I was amazed to see a German half-track come right across in front of me. We were all intermingled. Now, I don't know who got the biggest shock, them or us. But without any words, no shots fired, the Germans turned left down towards Merger, and we turned right to a little gap in the hills. Well, we stopped. Now, we stopped in an unusual way, because when we stopped, the 25-pounders were in front of us. Then the anti-tank guns, then the troops. Normally, it's the other way around. Well, during the night, the Germans came forward, and they pinched our 25-pounders, and they used them on us next morning. And I still remember the three Crusader tanks at the bottom turning around and we're left us. And mind, I don't blame them, because 25 pounds is not pleasant, especially when they're your own, you know. That's where I went and got his VC. Now, he was just on the other side of the hill to me. And I was in such a position, when we stopped, it was dark, I didn't know where we were. And it was such a hard surface to dig into, I was just more or less below the surface. And on my left were the companies. And I lifted my head up, I had to get down quick, and I put my tin, I remember putting my topi on the top of the trench, and my pipe, and as far as I know, it's still there. Now, Danny, get up for it. Well, I heard this officer shout, every man for himself. So, I looked down, I said, well, my carrier's near the front, towards the Germans. I said, either go forward, or go down the hill and get captured or killed. So, I said, hell, I'm not going to walk. So, I went and dashed forward, and I got my carrier. Well, as I was leaving these basin. I was standing upside and looking down, and I saw this gallon. I'm not sure he was a corporal that saw him at that particular time. But what struck me is funny, and it still does, he was running with his rifle in a tail position. That's like level with the ground, you know. And he's had his army overcoat folded over his arm with the six buttons up that shine like the sunlight. And he's just trotting, you know. Well, anyway, I picked him up. And I went a little bit further and I saw a three-tonner. And it was stuck in a hole. It had troops in the back, so I gets out. And I gets a torch in and pulls it out. Now, there must have been an officer in this truck, right? But anyway, I pulled him out. The sergeant and all my crew got out into the back of the three-tonner. And it was away. And of course, by the time I put my tow chain back, regimental style, in the carrier, the Germans caught up with us. And this is funny, this. All the shells started to fall in front of me, right? And somebody told me, I'd heard, shells never fall in the same place twice. Now, why I should think that, I don't know. So I put my seat on the floor, and I charged through these shells. And mind you, quite correct, they don't, but mind the bloody near. I was little. And there's me and me official driver, just the two of us. We're on our own for 5 days and nights in the desert. No idea out, no compass, no maps. And I found my way back. And I found my way back right to the 4th Indian Div. And behind them was the remains of the 9th Battalion. Now that's funny, that. I mean, I could have landed anywhere in the Alamein box, but I landed right by the battalion.
And how did you find your way back?
By the sun in the west, sinks in the west. And I just followed that. I travelled during the day, so that I could look for any minefields, theirs or ours, and I saw one vast column coming down, about 2 miles further on. I said, that cannot be ours, that too big. So I was away from it. And I remember just before I got into El Alamein, a fella, I think either from the Life magazine or some other magazine like that, he wanted to take my photograph because the carrier was riddled with holes. And I had a bandage on my head. Now, to this day, I don't know why that bandage was there. I remembered it, but why? I don't think I ever went to hospital. I've got no recollection at all. But I never saw the photograph. And that was down to El Alamein.
So you didn't actually see Wakenshaw, William?
Oh, no. There's a little rise in front of us. Lots of things happened there when nobody could tell. I mean, such a position of the hill. It was broken, as I say, in between with the road. In between the two hills, and headquarters companies are more on the right, with the companies out on their own on the left, and the Germans are coming down towards the left. Actually, we were told there's a division and a half of Germans, of the 90th Light, and would it be the 15th Panzer? They're the ones which charged us. I mean, there were about 1,000 of us all together. There weren't all DLI, there were odds and swords, which we picked up on the way down, you know. We took them on, we held them back quite a while.
What kind of losses did you have?
Well, as I say, there's 117 of us got away. I mean, we lost a lot of prisoners, no doubt. They weren't all day, but 117 out of 1,000, it's quite a lot, you know. And most of them, what got away was the headquarters company, the specialists, the carriers, the mortars and the anti-tank. You know, had they been with the companies further forward, I don't suppose they'd have got back either. But just the way that we landed, not the particular spot.
This would mean that your battalion commander got away as well.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Who was that?
Percy. I remember him on the way down. He commandeered a South African anti-aircraft gun, 20mm, 40mm, and he used it against the tanks. Very good fella. But I think he'd been bowler-hatted. I heard somebody say he was a brigadier before he joined us. And, of course, he was running colonel when...
Maybe
came
a brigadier after.
He must have done that when he left us. I don't know what happened to him after that.
So you got back to El Alamein and that area, and you picked up the rest of the battalion. What did they?
Just bedded down in the area. They formed up. That's all.
What kind of reception did you get when you arrived back? Did they expect you?
Just one of them things. He just moved and reported back, and that was it. They didn't say, where have you been or how did you get away? Just one of them things, you know.
Was there any discussion with the remaining
not
men about what had happened?
Not a thing. That's something you never talk about. For some reason, men never discussed the war or the battle. They never said, this fellow was coming out of his bin and I shot him. Nothing like that. It's just one of them things you accept as you see. I mean, you could go into a battle like I did at El Alamein. I never fired a shot. The simple reason, you only have a certain area to cover. Now, even the Germans are thin on the ground. I mean, you couldn't man every inch. So they have machine guns to cover certain areas, you see. Well, you only have a certain objective to take. You just don't go on and on till you can't go any further. This year, we maybe go 500 yards or a mile. And that was it. When you get there, you stop. Well, what I remember about El Alamein was, as I say, we went through the gun area. I didn't know they were there. And I don't even know where you were there when they fired in 900 guns.
That was when you're moving up.
On the moving up. And I got the shock of my life. I thought I'd lost my head with a blast. And I remember going up this little track. And I thought I'd leave it to carry it, but I'd walk up the top. And I'd only about 20 yards up. And the big whack. And an 88 shell hit the road and thundered, whoop, in the air. I said, well, that was clever. If I'd gone a bit further, they caught me. Anyway, while I was lying there, another one come over. And then I was suddenly aware of a tup, tup, tup. I said, well, there's a tup, tup. And I realised there was a bullet passing me here. The noise of it. A put, 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 put. I was away. That was my recollection of the Battle of El Alamein. I didn't fire the shot, but got to where we were going, and that was it.
You don't recall lining up at the night and the barrage?
Oh, no. Well, as I say, well, I was moving along in the barrage on the way up. People were actually moving while the barrage was getting there. They weren't all in the line waiting for the gun to go off. They were moving into position. I remember sitting waiting all the tanks passing. They were about 300 past me, you know. But of course, it was light then. They were moving up to the strong points. And that was my Battle of El Alamein. I was there. I took my objective. But there's no Germans there. Just one of them things. Yet other lads might have been fighting for the lives further down, you know.
What rank did you hold at this time?
I think I was still corporal. Was I now? No, you're going somewhere. I know I was a sergeant 3 years. The war finished, didn't you? I might have been a sergeant. Could have been a sergeant then. And then, of course, we moved up to Marlath Line. Now, the thing, what I remember about that was, apart from the battle itself, was pretty tough, was the fact that prior to the battle, we'd be given strict instruction to blanco your equipment, polish your brasses. I used 4 gallons of petrol to clean me carrier, and this general come round, he didn't even look. And we went into the man of the battle, and it was moonlight, and then larger standing like targets, the brasses. I just thought, what a bloody army we've got. You know, brasses clean in the middle of a battle.
Was this in the middle, as you say, or was this just before prior to going in?
Just prior to going in. I had the general's inspection, then the attack.
And was this the divisional general?
Oh, yes. I don't know who he was. I can't remember the moment, like. But that was instruction about cleaning all the equipment. Of course, in them days, aluminium, the water supply was better. Not the drinking water, but we got seawater. We're washing your clothes. And this, well, I used to wash them in petrol. But the seawater came in very handy, you know. But I just thought all that blanco and white webbing and brasses, just before a battle.
The journey up to Alamein, it was a long way, do you recall it?
No. I mean, it's difficult to describe when I say, all you see is sand. You know, it's either a sandstorm or it's clear. I mean, it's a hill here, it's a hill there. If it's a sandstorm, the hill's gone, it's somewhere else. You know, it's just a vast expanse, as far as the eye can see. It's not like these you see in the pictures, there'd be sand dunes. That might be, I suppose, in the top half, where the Yanks were, but not where we were, just level, you know.
Marath, what memories have you of the action?
Marath Line, I was lucky. We operated a 24-hour left out of battle. Right? This corporal took my place in my career. It was hit, he lost his leg, he was killed. Now, whether that was Providence or not, I don't know. But there's another instance I might tell you about. Coming down from Gazala, within this middle of nowhere, and the battalion said, look, you stop here. Kick up as much dirt as you can to let the Germans think you were stationary here. And the battalion pulled out, you see. So we stopped there all day. I could see the Italian moved about. I thought, oh, well, it's getting dark. I think the time will go. I'll have a cup of tea first. Right? So I got in the trench, put the tea on, and just as the water started to boil, I tossed the take a voice and get out. Just like that, get out, sharp. I picked it up and jumped on another one. Now, anybody who watched him must have thought I was crackers. This shell fell in the hole. One shell. Slap man, as I see, I can see the fire team going now. If I look, who told me to get out? It couldn't have been sixth sense, because I wasn't going to know the gun was going to fire, was I? So, I mean, from a religious point of view, you could see I was looked after.
And were you a religious man?
No, not particularly. I believe, like everybody else. I mean, life's too complex to be just, you know, there's more to it than just life. There's got to have a creation somewhere. There's too much into life.
And what were your feelings going into action, as you did, about the fact that you... Did you feel that you might be injured
never,
or wounded?
Never. That sort of thing never entered your mind. You're too busy looking where you're going, be honest. You never thought of, as I say, you were too young to think of death. Had you thought about it, you wouldn't have gone at all. It's just one of them things. I think that's why wars are caused by for young fellas, because they know they don't think of the death. I mean, who thinks about dying at 20-year-old? I mean, when my face was split open in Southern Wallen, if I'd been older, I might have thought of getting a pension.